He's the man behind the mission to sell Indiana to the world. State's chief economic development officer. But who is Indiana Secretary of Commerce Jim Schellinger? Raised in South Bend, one of eight children, Schellinger played football and baseball at St. Joseph's High School, earned a degree from the University of Notre Dame, and launched a distinguished professional career at Indianapolis architectural firm CSO. Jim Schellinger is also an anomaly of sorts, a Democrat working for a Republican governor. He himself had an eye on Indiana's highest office at one time, running an unsuccessful bid for governor in 2007. As Indiana Secretary of Commerce, he has made 61 international trips to 28 countries. But outside all of the business deals, meetings, and planning to make Indiana an economic juggernaut, you might be surprised to know that Jim Schellinger possesses a wicked wit and a strong attention to detail. And I'm pleased to be joined by Indiana Secretary of Commerce Jim Schellinger on the Business and Beyond podcast presented by PNC. Jim, welcome.
Thank you, Gary. It's always so good to be with you.
Oh, well, it's great to get you in one place. 61 trips, 28 countries, selling Indiana literally to the world. Do you ever sleep?
Oh, sure. Just a lot of different time zones. But actually, that was done in the first 3 years of the governor's term, because my last trip was January of 2020. So I haven't gone in quite a while because of COVID.
Well, what's your sales pitch? You know, you've obviously had success. The state has set records for economic development deals, for job commitments. The average wage continues to go in the right direction. Why are companies in the United States and well beyond buying what Indiana is selling?
On one hand, it's very complex, and on the other hand, it's very simple. And I always say I've got the best job in the state of Indiana. Maybe you have the best one, Gary. I know you're pretty proud of your position and you should be in what you've done over the many, many years. But I just tell a story. I tell a story about Indiana that I had nothing to do with. I didn't write one single sentence of it. And I talk about when we really became a pro state, a pro business state back in 2005 under Mitch Daniels, where he came in as a change agent. He made a lot of changes in his first 2 years. And then he came back and did a lot more as we went on. And today, we had Governor Pence then, same trajectory. Governor Holcomb, same trajectory. We'll have had 20 years of tremendous Republican leadership. And you just have to give credit where credit's due. And again, we've got super majorities in both chambers of the General Assembly. But I tell the story. I talk about low taxes. I talk about low regulations, reasonable regulations. I talk about our balanced budget, our AAA credit rating. The fact that post-COVID, we're going to have, again, a $2.4 billion surplus. We obviously went down in COVID, but made a lot of great decisions with COVID, and we're going to restore that. And that's the story. And then all the great amenities of Indiana, Crossroads of America, number one airport in Indianapolis, number two FedEx in the world, and all our great universities and colleges. Just tell the story. And it just people are really taken back by it.
Yeah, well, you mentioned Mitch Daniels. In your view, how important was his decision to create the Indiana Economic Development Corporation, going away from the old Indiana Department of Commerce into this public-private entity of sorts, IEDC? I think that was one of the, if not the first thing he did when he got into office. How important was that?
Well, I've learned over the past 5.5 years, and how important is that? I guess I'd refer to him as St. Mitch Daniels on this one, because I'll tell you what he did for Indiana. You know, you think about it for a second. Prior to the IEDC, you had to go to 7 or 8 entities for approval of an economic development deal that could take weeks and weeks, if not months and months. And now it's one-stop shopping. You come here, we're empowered. We can give a deal, put a deal out, calculate it within 48 hours. Once we figure that it meets all our metrics and we have to follow those, we can approve that and then ratify it by the board. But that speed of business, operating speed of business, is something that I don't think any other state's doing like Indiana is.
Yeah, Jim, you talk to a lot of CEOs, a lot of site selection consultants and others, and Indiana's consistently been ranked among the top states for business chief executive, I think in the top 5 for a number of years. What are some of the, give us an idea of what these CEOs behind closed doors, away from the microphones, what are they saying about Indiana?
Well, it goes back to the stability, our being fiscally conservative, our being stable in terms of having reserves and our AAA credit rating. You know, Gary, I always say I actually had a call this morning with a prospect that is over 1,000 jobs and over $700 million CapEx. And, you know, if you look at the statistics, there's about 9 of them that rank us, whether it be affordability, whether it be infrastructure, or the best places to do business, whether it's tax, property tax, income tax, you name it, right down to, you know, we have number one in transparency and efficiency of government. How about that in this day and age where that should be considered very, very important? But we are in single digits in every one of those single digits, probably one of them in New Heston, all of them, but single digits. But we only have one that's not a single digit, and that's a triple digit, and that happens to be the AAA credit rating, highest you can get in the country.
Jim, a great story to tell, no question about it, but Indiana and every state has challenges. In your view, a lot of people talk about talent and there are other issues, but if you had to put one item on the list for Indiana's most substantial challenge when it comes to the future and growing the economy, what would that one challenge in your view be?
No question about it. It would be continuing to spread our message. You know, for a long, long time, Gary, you and I both remember when Indiana was a flyover state. If this is people fly over this state anymore, they do so at their own financial peril. If they look at us, they will figure out a way to realize that this is the best place to live, work, play, and stay. So just continue to get our message out, even in take Indianapolis. You know, I both know back in 84 when I moved to Indianapolis from South Bend, you know, this was India no place. It was Naptown. Carl Sandburg, the poet, one time said it's the largest farm you ever visited with a monument in the center of it. So there's a lot of things like that that we have to continue to dispel because it's not true. I mean, we are 12 hours away from 83% of the population, a 12-hour drive, an 8-hour drive from 20 major municipalities, and a 4-hour drive from the third largest economy in the country, Chicago. So it's something that we just have to continue to get that message out. But I think a lot of people are understanding that now because we had never hurting for pipeline.
Yeah. Well, you're obviously bullish on the state of Indiana. You're a native. You grew up in South Bend. Big family, the 6th of 8 children, shared a bedroom with 4 brothers. What do you remember most about growing up? Sounds like you had to get to the dinner table early to make sure you got something to eat, right?
Yeah, well, I think the best thing was my parents. You know, I didn't realize at the time, 1973, my father got laid off from Bendix. He worked as a quality control inspector on the brake line and the aerospace line. And so it was a tough job. And he got laid off in 1973 with 8 children going to Holy Cross Grade School, St. Joe High School. And I went back after he passed away. He kept meticulous records. And back in those days, he was making $13,000 a year. And, you know, you think about it, when Bernie Sanders announced his presidency, he said, and I'll tell you, I remember where I came from. My parents were economically challenged, not far from here. And they had to work every single day to make ends meet. And my wife, Laura, looked over and said, sounds like your mom and dad. I said, no, that's not my mom and dad. My mom and dad didn't work every day to make ends meet. That was mathematically impossible. My mom and dad worked every day to keep the fact from us that we are financially challenged. We never knew until we were in our 20s. We didn't know our parents grew up, or we grew up in basically a poor environment. I like to say, in respect to my parents, economically challenged, but it was basically that. And in that bedroom, there were 5 boys and there were no bunk beds. It was 12 by 12. My kids, when they were little, they had a sandbox that was 12 by 12 and they fought in it all the time. I'd go out and say, you guys figure this out. I grew up in a bedroom the same size as a sandbox with 4 brothers, 2 double beds and a single bed. And the highlight of our sports spectacle was that 3-foot by 3-foot area in the middle. And we put a hanger out with a towel with bobby pins and use a sock for a nerf ball. And the thing I remember the most about that was my oldest brother, Bobby's one of his best friends, Tom Aberdathy, playing basketball in there. And, you know, his head about hit the ceiling. It was only 7-foot ceiling. And I'll tell you, there was a sand finish on the ceiling, and he had a lot of scraped knuckles playing in there.
Those are great stories and great memories, obviously. Of course, Tom Aberdathy went on to be a star at IU. You mentioned your dad, that experience of him being laid off when you were, I think, in 7th grade. That had an impact on you, didn't it, that you've carried all the way to this day?
It was huge. And, you know, what was interesting, it was strange because, you know, we'd get up in the morning in one bathroom and, you know, it was nothing to have a sister taking a bath and boys around the water closet, my dad shaving. And we used to joke, you know, with 10 people in the house in one bathroom, how did you know which toothbrush to use? And I just always respond, you use the dry one. So at any rate, that was a great experience for us to grow up in that environment. And I think that when I found out that my dad was laid off, the one thing I really remember the best about it was my mom telling us, you know, seeing my dad at home every day was very, very strange. And it not dressing up with his, he wore short sleeves and a tie. But the fact that they said, you find out at that point who your real friends are.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. You played sports in high school, sports important to you, ultimately went on to the University of Notre Dame, got an architecture degree. Your time at Notre Dame, what do you remember about your college days? Any funny or memorable stories that stick out to you?
Well, unfortunately, no. And I'll tell you why. I lived at home, so I never lived on campus. So they call that a townie. I worked a full-time job at a tool and die shop.
At a tool and die. Tell me about that, because I think that's fascinating, all the way through college.
Yeah, I worked the summer before I went to Notre Dame, and I asked the gentleman to keep me on. And I said, if you could keep me on, I appreciate it. And he did. And I painted a building in the summer, but then he moved me inside on the night shift, and I was a steel grinder. So all the steel that came in that the tool and die shop people would work on, I would sand the sides and the corners, deburr the holes and slots. And it was really a messy, messy job. And it was very, very physical. And I did that for 5 years. And it was interesting. I would never go back and trade it. It was a day-to-day thing. And I was just talking about this over the weekend. You know, I'd kind of hang out, you know, like I was like a street person in many respects. I would just constantly take my backpack and tuck into the corner somewhere to get some sleep between classes. I never really interacted with anybody. I always felt extremely inferior being somebody from South Bend to be out there at Notre Dame. And the whole time I was there, I only went to 2 football games, you know, over the 5 year, it's a 5 year program. I actually went to a lot when I was younger, between 8 and probably 12, when Joey Yonto, my best friend, his dad was Joey Yonto Sr., was the defensive coordinator, defensive line coach. That's my memories of football. But, you know, there were happy memories. And probably the best of all was when I went to get my diploma. I absolutely was convinced my mom and dad were coming to graduation, first Notre Dame person in the family. And I was just fearful that there would not be a degree in there, that I owe a bill, didn't finish a class. And I had a lot of reasons to be that concerned. And they meet in the athletic, the field house part of the ACC with the professors around that college's major. And I purposely went late, but the architects are a pretty zany group of people. So I was actually the first one there. So I visited with them and everything. And I took my diploma down a hall, same hall you see in the movie Rudy. I went down the hall, went back. I just kneeled down, just squatted down and just went, man, this is not going to be good. And I just waited and finally opened it up and there was a degree in there. And I'll tell you, I think I was always a little chubby. I jumped probably 3 feet off the ground. That was probably the happiest moment of my days at Notre Dame.
I love it. Another great story, Jim. Hey, this is the portion of the podcast. We call it the lightning round. So we've got a couple questions for you. Quick questions for quick answers. Are you up for the challenge?
Sure. I give it a shot.
Well, okay. Think about this one. TV sitcom. Is there a TV sitcom you would want to be in?
Probably MASH for a lot of reasons. I love that TV series and I always wish I had served.
Favorite way to relax?
Sit out back on the deck and have a iced tea or something in the middle of the summer under a fan, ceiling fan, and just, and I don't get to do that very often, but that's, and being with my grandkids.
That's very good. Okay. Beer or wine?
Wine.
Okay. Biggest influence, this is a tough one for a quick answer, but biggest influence on your life?
Well, I want to just real quickly go back to the other one. I really haven't drank a beer since the 1982 Chicago White Sox Seattle Mariners game, and I'll let you figure that out. Biggest influence on my life was my mother, of course, but outside my mother, it would have been Sister Aloysia Marie that I had for 7th, 8th grade English, and I kept in touch with her. She died in 2013, And I had gone up to see her 3-4 times a year, and she died. She was just coming up on her 103rd birthday.
Wow. Favorite sport?
Football.
What makes Jim Schellinger happy?
Well, the sense of accomplishment is really what makes me happy. And you alluded to this a little earlier with my father. I feel like I've always been lucky. As an architect, we are able to alter the face of God's earth and make people's lives better. And that's an incredible responsibility, but also a great privilege. And to be here at IEDC, to be Secretary of Commerce for all the amazing people in the state of Indiana, and to have an impact on their livelihoods, there can be no higher call.
Fall, winter, spring, or summer, what's your favorite season?
Oh, that's a toughie because I love them all. You know, when I was little, I told my dad, I said, South Bend with a winter effect, you know, lake effect snow. I said, Dad, why would you live in this city? Why would you? I mean, you wouldn't live in a house that had ice on the floor and icicles hanging all around. And I said, why wouldn't you move to a warm climate? And he says, well, because I like the change of seasons. And I thought that was crazy. But now I really love the change of seasons. So I don't know if that's an appropriate answer, the change of seasons.
Yeah.
But probably my favorite kind of goes with football is fall.
Is fall. Okay, final question for you. If you could invite three people, you've got a table at St. Elmo, or maybe it's a foursome at Crooked Stick. What three people would you invite to join you for dinner or join you for a great round of golf?
Well, I don't know about the golf part, but in terms of the dinner, I would probably love to have a dinner with Gandhi. Are you talking about past people or current?
Oh, yeah, sure. Past or present.
But Gandhi, Aristotle, and Alexander the Great.
Wow. Now, that is a very highbrow answer, Jim. That's very good. I like it. Well, you know, in this age of division, a lack of bipartisanship, you really stand out as an anomaly in many respects, a Democrat working for a Republican governor. We'll explore that and a lot more when Business and Beyond continues, presented by PNC. Welcome back to the Business and Beyond podcast presented by PNC. Really happy to have as our guest this week, Jim Schellinger. He is Indiana's Secretary of Commerce. And as you heard in the first part of our podcast, he's a funny guy, too. He's got some great stories. Jim, thanks for being with us this week. As mentioned earlier, you got that architecture degree from Notre Dame. You went on to really an outstanding career for more than 3 decades at Indianapolis-based CNO, respected architectural firm. And I understand there was there a story, kind of a backstory to how you got hired at CSO in the first place?
Yeah, there sure is. You know, it was interesting in 84 when I graduated and moved to Indianapolis. You know, I had these dreams in my third and fourth year. I was going to go to Santa Barbara, Boston, you know, dreams of leaving. But, you know, with our family, the 8 kids and mom and dad, there were 33 grandkids in the end of the day, and just a big family, aunts and uncles. And I decided I want to stay in the state, but I wanted to go to a larger metropolitan area to practice architecture because I thought there'd be more opportunities. So I set out to get a job in Indianapolis, and I sent out 10 letters and resumes to 10 businesses in central Indiana. And I heard from 9 that 2 of them said they would interview me, but they weren't hiring because of the recession. And the other 7 said, we'll keep your resume on file. And I never heard from the 10th one. Never got word, never got a letter back. And that was 84. I became president and CEO of that same company in 1996. So it was sort of, you know, serendipity how those things work out. But went in as a work in the print room for several months and then graduating upward, and 32 years later, retired from there as CEO and chairman.
You dipped your toes into politics. You ran for governor in 2008 as a Democrat, ran against Jill Long Thompson for the Democratic nomination. As you think back on that experience of running for governor, biggest takeaway, what do you remember most about that?
Well, first of all, I have to qualify that back when I did that, I was off my medications. I'm back on now, so don't have that excitement. But no, it was an experience, and probably the best thing that ever happened to me is I wasn't successful in the primary. I really did know Governor Daniels at the time, and I think he's one of the most brilliant people I've ever met in my life. So, you know, the fact of now being a Democrat, you know, I don't look at it that way anymore because I just look at people and what's best for people. And, you know, and in fact, Gary, when I made the decision to do that, one of the driving factors was I never served publicly, never served military, never did anything. So I thought this is an opportunity to serve. And I was only going to do it for 18 months, right? With Governor Pence to finish out his term and stayed on with Governor Holcomb, willingly stayed on, grateful to stay on. What a great governor he is. But then I also made a decision thinking about it, you know, Democratic and Republican leaders. And I thought, you know, in the end of the day, I was on the board before this, you know, Gary. I never saw a job come to the board for approval that was a Democratic job or a Republican job. So if there's one thing that can bring us together, unlike any other thing, it has to be the livelihood of people we serve.
Yeah. Well, and again, interesting, again, Governor Pence came on board as president of the IEDC, ultimately Secretary of Commerce, now under Governor Holcomb, another Republican. Do you think, there's so much talk about this nationally, maybe don't see as much of it here in Indiana, but is bipartisanship, in your view, is it dead in America?
Well, I wouldn't say it's dead at all. I would say that it doesn't get the light of day and it doesn't make the press. But I think there's a lot of cooperation behind closed doors between parties. I've always said, you know, I have three boys. They seem young to me, but now one's 26, one's 28, one's 38. And, you know, it's interesting. I said to people, these guys are different than us. And I'm so proud. But there was a day, Gary, you had this too. I met your parents. This was a day. I mean, your parents didn't like the way you wore your hair. They didn't like the way you dressed. They didn't like the kids you hung out with. They didn't like the music you listened to. We all go through, everybody in your studio has that. But there comes a time when you sort of graduate and good things happen. And this young generation, recently somebody told me that when making big decisions, you should have to be between 40 and 60. And I asked them, why would you say that? And they said, because over 60, you don't want to change anything. And under 40, you change everything. And somewhere in between, reality falls, as Lou Holtz says. But I'm so proud of this generation. And I think that they're going to, you know, you take, you know, gender ID, sexual orientation, color, you know, it's a non-issue to them, non-issue. And the biggest thing, Gary, that I'm surprised that they don't understand why my generation even cares about it and spends any time on it. So I think there's great hope for the future. And I think it's little steps, you know, shuffle things up. Why do we have to have a left and a right inside a chamber? Why not just mix it up and you know, just little things like that that I think will resonate with young people. And I think we need to really work in mentoring them because they are our future.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned a personal life, three grown children, you and your wife, Laura, who coming up on, as I understand, a big anniversary coming up on 30 years of marriage, right?
30 years. God knows how she put up with me for all this time. She's a perfect wife. She's very intelligent. She's beautiful. But most importantly, she is resourceful. And she loves a bargain, Gary. When my son Johnny, my middle son, was making his first communion, I said, get him a suit. She goes, no, he's only going to wear it a couple times. I said, get him a suit, his first communion. So I came home one night. She says, Johnny, get your blazer on. So he comes downstairs with a dark blue blazer with the gold buttons that you've seen many times. She says, what do you think about it? I said, you got it for $5 at a consignment shop. She goes, how did you know? I said, because you get excited about bargains. You don't get excited about anything else. And so she's a great partner in life.
Yeah, you know her well. Where'd you meet? How did you meet?
Well, we actually met at CSO. And, you know, I think the moment I fell for her was I walked around the corner one day and she was on her knees in a dress beating up a Xerox machine, a copy machine. And I thought, that's my kind of girl. And then I wanted to ask her on a date, but didn't really know how to do that, Gary. So what I did is I went into the Interiors Library and I pulled out color samples, paint samples, one green, one red, one yellow. And then I took the adding machine, this shows my age, and took out a whole lot of paper from the adding machine, rolled it up like an accordion. Taped it in her mailbox with the color samples at the back. And when she got her mail, it pulled out. Obviously, we're long. And I said, if you'd like to go to lunch today, put the green chip in my mailbox. If you don't want to go today, but you'd like to go sometime, put the yellow. And if you just don't ever want to go, put the red. And about 11:45, the green one showed up in my mailbox. We went to lunch at the Corner Wine Bar. And that's the rest is history.
And the rest is history. I love it. Well, your grandparents too, right? A set of twins. What's it like being a grandpa?
Oh my God. I, you know, everybody told you it's the greatest time of your life. And, you know, the phrases, you know, the kids, they go home when they're done. I'd never let them leave. They're up to me. They are so fun. They're not identical twins. And they're at that age, terrible twos is appropriate to refer to them. They turn two on the 27th of December. But, I'll tell you the thing that I thought I was there when they're born. And I had a big smile on my face. And this is the thing I loved about that. It's not so much they'll go home when they're done, but the fact that I smiled, I don't have to pay their college education or, you know, which who knows, I might have to in the end. But, you know, it's like I don't have to teach them right from wrong. This is what their parents have to do. And I can guide the parents. But it was just that, it's just a miracle, such a miracle. And I always thought it'd be great to have grandchildren. I know, Gary, you have some, because I thought you're going to see, in my case, but they're all boys, you're going to see a bit of your sons, in my case, in them. And I do. It's unbelievable, the similarities. And I actually see a lot in their spouse, in my son's spouse. But that's Nick that has the twins. One is named James Armin, after me, and one is named Finnegan Andrew, after Andy Scheel.
Very good. Very good. Great man, Andy Scheel, to be sure.
Yes, for sure.
Two forward-looking questions for you to wrap up here, Jim. One, as you look at Indiana, how is Indiana positioned in your mind for the future, not for 2021, but looking, you know, 5, 10, 15 years and beyond? How do you think the state is positioned for its economic future?
Well, as you know, the governor in the past 4 years from 2017 to 2020 has set all records, all the records that we track. So whether it's job commitments, new job commitments, actually many more than just the five, but job commitments, wages, CapEx, payroll and counties. And then if you look at foreign direct investment, we've tripled it in the last 3 years. And again, I don't think there's ever going to be a stopping point if we just keep on our toes. And given the state's responsibility as it relates to fiscal responsibility, I think that that's always going to be a big deal for us. And I think the sky's the limit. And if we can continue to work on basically retaining our talent and then attracting talent, Gary, last 2 years, 19, we had 31,800 people came to Indiana for a job. And then we had the earliest number right now that'll have to be quantified at some point, but it's essentially around 24,000. So that's prior to that, Gary, as you know, we were basically an out-migration state. The fact that the birth rate outpaced the death rate kept us, you know, level. But we've got a lot of exciting stuff to tell people about.
How about for Jim Schellinger? What's next for you, Jim? You've had a great career. You've got a lot of years left for sure. What's next for Jim Schellinger?
Well, interestingly enough, again, I mentioned my wife, so this won't surprise you. But while I was out of town, she sold our house. That was up one of 8 houses on the Meridian Hills golf course. I haven't golfed in years based on this assignment. And then she bought a house. And I recently said to somebody, I'm going to start looking at some real estate. And they said, really? You just bought a house? I said, no, not that. I got to go stop by Crown Hill someday, the cemetery. I got to buy some real estate there because I'm going to be 61. And, you know, I've had to, and this is sort of really horrible, but I've had to step in on 4 family deaths that were basically 2 were understood, but 2 weren't. And had to go in and do all the paperwork and pick out a gravesite and a tombstone and the casket and the clothes. And when you're mourning like that, it's a really horrible thing to do. But I want to continue to serve the governor as long as he'll have me. He's asked me to stay on, appointed me for 4 more years. At that point, I'd be 64, 65-ish. And, you know, I don't know. I'm certainly never going to retire. I'd go crazy. So I'll always do something. I suppose I could open another practice or maybe even be a consultant as it relates to architecture and interiors, but also economic development. So it'd be a big platform to be able to help people out. All I know is I want to continue to serve people. There's no other reason to live if you're not doing that.
Yep. Indiana would be well served for that to continue to happen. Jim Schellinger, Indiana Secretary of Commerce, a native Hoosier from South Bend. Jim, it is always a pleasure to be with you, and especially in this environment where we can hear a few stories. You're a great storyteller as well. Thanks for your service to the state and all you do to help grow the state's economy.
Well, thank you, Gary. And don't make no mistake about it. You're a very integral part of the business environment in Indiana. Very integral. Your show is amazing on how you help promote business in the state of Indiana in such a positive way. Thank you.
Well, you're very, very kind. Thanks, Jim. And thank you for joining us on this edition of the Business and Beyond podcast presented by PNC. For additional information about the podcast and Indiana Business News 24/7, just check out InsideIndianaBusiness.com. I'm Gary Dick. We'll see you next time.